From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in Wakanda at the end of an epic battle between the Avengers and their allies and the warlord turned mildly misguided environmentalist Thanos. As heavily reported by CNN and Fox News in particular, Thanos was successful in his quest to obtain the Infinity Stones, and as many of you are well aware, has wiped out half of the universe now, so we're the lucky ones. Yay, us. But now you may have some questions about why this all happened. Despite popular belief, Thanos still calls this an act of mercy. On his home planet, Titan, he noticed that there weren't enough resources to sustain a growing population. So, you know, mass genocide seemed like a logical solution. But was it? Now, I know he gets upset when we question him because he's got like those six Infinity Stones and he could snap his fingers and wipe any of us out. But for now, let's talk about it. It's one of the questions we're left to explore at the end of the most recent Avengers film, Infinity War. The new and final film in the series, Endgame, is here. And like Infinity War, it's expected to make political statements about climate change, population control, environmental policy, and more. And this hour, we explore the politics of the Avengers and the Marvel Universe and why it's basically worked. I mean, I haven't seen all of the films. I've seen Infinity War. And you don't have to be a huge Marvel head or, you know, planning to even see this movie, I think, to appreciate this conversation because of the interesting themes, the way it's a little more layered and complex than you often see when it comes to villains, good guys, bad guys, and also just the fact they've tied all these movies together. So there's a big impact on our culture here. So let's say hello to a big studio, the film critic for City Newspaper, Adam Lubitow's back. Welcome back. Are you ready? Thanks.
I am excited to be here.
Everybody's excited to be here. Adam Frank has been outrageous texting me today. You know, all the things as an astrophysicist with the University of Rochester we've ever talked about. And I always like having you here. I think you are more excited for this than any of them.
Science, forget about it. Hey, what I want to know.
Science and space.
Yes.
Space.
MCU.
Well, thank you for being here, I guess. Jackie McGriff, owner of Jackie Photography and always one of our favorite pop culture critics and commentators. How are you? Are you excited?
I am very, very excited. It's going to be an emotional night tonight.
Emotional?
Yes.
Have you seen spoilers?
No. But I will be watching Endgame tonight, so.
Yeah. Well, three hours plus. No bathroom breaks, I hear. Kristen Edmond, podcast contributor and producer, welcome. Nice having you as well.
Thanks so much for having me.
Have you guys all avoided spoilers?
Yes.
Purposefully.
Like the plague.
Because they're out there.
Oh,
from
yeah,
what I
sure.
understand.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Just don't
understand.
Look.
So, listeners, we are committed to a no-spoiler discussion this hour. So if you are ready for Endgame, or if you're kind of confused or interested, or maybe you're going to go see it, we're not going to ruin anything about the plot of this film at all. Nobody's seen it. We are mostly here because we want to talk about the phenomenon, why it works, and whether we think there's a lot of sort of political and social commentary about what are they actually saying? Who is Thanos? Well, if you don't know, let's listen to Thanos, all right? So at the end of the last film, this purple dude got his hand on the sixth and final Infinity Stone, which, you know, there's six of these stones, which come all the way from Adam Frank, astrophysicist, the birth of the universe, right, I think?
That's true. They okay. Leftover.
Leftover from the birth of the universe, which is, I don't know if that's scientifically accurate.
That's not as far as I know.
Okay. So Thanos gets them all, and he's decided that he's going to wipe out half of the population in the universe with the snap of his finger. And he's explaining in this clip why he thinks that's actually good and merciful for people, because people are sort of these vulture. Well, that's the wrong term. We are like a plague on our host planets all across the universe, and we're bad. So let's listen to Thanos here.
Titan was like most planets. Too many mouths, not enough to go around. And when we faced extinction, I offered a solution.
Genocide.
But random. Dispassionate, fair to rich and poor alike. They called me a madman. And what I predicted came to pass.
Congratulations, you're a prophet.
I'm a survivor.
Who wants to murder trillions.
With all six stones, I could simply snap my fingers. They would all cease to exist, and I call that mercy.
And then what?
I finally rest and watch the sunrise on a grateful universe. The hardest choices require the strongest wills.
All right, let's talk a little bit about that. Let's go around the table here. What I think is compelling about this, similar to what I thought about Killmonger in Black Panther, is that there is at least a layer of something interesting. Obviously, the guy's evil. He's a kind of a torturer. He's willing to kill his own children. But he seems to think he's actually doing this for a good reason. And I do find that more interesting than a lot of the good, bad. How do you see it as a critic?
No, I definitely agree with that. But it also kind of gets into one of my criticisms of the film, because everything I've read, I mean, Adam could probably speak to more to that, that plan actually wouldn't work. And nobody bothers to actually say that to him. They're just, you know, argue with him about the morality of it.
Don't do it.
Yeah, because obviously he doesn't care about the morality. Like, so why not engage with him on, you
like
know,
the functionality?
Exactly. So it's like nobody thought to bring that up, and maybe that would convince him.
Well, Neil deGrasse Tyson tweeted, "If you wield the power to snap your finger and end half of all life in the universe to preserve resources for those who remain, then you surely have the power to snap your finger and double the resources instead." And then deGrasse Tyson says, "Sorry, Avengers, I checked the math on that one." So what you see is, it's interesting, but you kind of wanted somebody to be like,
I think somebody should have at least said it, because it kind of the movie kind of sets it up like, oh, maybe that's a good idea. That kind of leaves it there.
And that's actually another interesting point, just because if you want to get really critical, and that's what Adam's job is, not just a fan, if somebody did that and he still resisted it, then you could more clearly see him as just bad. Yeah. He's committed to a dumb plan that is going to hurt a lot of people, and he's not willing to be persuaded off it.
Yeah.
In this case, though, nobody even tries. They're like, hey, buddy. Yeah. Nice ideas, but not going to work. How do you see it?
Well, I mean, diplomacy makes for really bad comic book movies. So you have to have that conflict, for sure.
And then they can get to, you know, punching each other.
Right, absolutely. And I think that's kind of when you get to the root of all, not necessarily real evil people, but maybe, you know, you find a kernel of their own truth and what they believe to be true. So even if we were trying to convince him that, yes, this wouldn't work, or yes, you could double the resources, they truly believe that they're the ones who are the right answer to the whole solution. So I don't even think if we had mentioned to them, yes, this is not going to work out for you, would that have even persuaded him?
Okay. Jackie McGriff.
Yeah, I mean, both what Kristen and Adam were saying, I mean, I definitely agree. If someone were to, like, try to combat him and everything, I mean, there's nothing stopping him from also, like, killing you off as well, you know what I mean? But also, like, with getting rid of half of the population, you're also getting rid of a lot of potential and existing, you know, people who I guess are, like, standing in your way, or, you know, enemies. So, I mean, either way, like, yeah, he's going to go off with this plan no matter what, you know, you say.
Okay. Adam Frank, is it good environmental policy?
Well, the problem is that if you actually argued with him, then he would realize that in order for this to really work, he would need to wipe out 99.99999% of the population, and that, because it's exponential. So, and you know, probably nobody wants to raise that issue with him. I do want to say, though, I think that Thanos is, you know, there's been lots of villains in the Marvel Universe. And over time, in the beginning, I thought, like, what's this, the big deal with this guy? But in that movie, I thought, throughout the film, the portrayal of his humanity, in some sense, he's a very powerful villain, because it's that scene where early on, where I think he's talking to Thor, and he's like, you know, I know what it's like to lose. I know what it's like to believe so strongly in that you're right and still lose. I just found that a really compelling, you know, description of his humanity, of his, you know, he's not just a paper cutout of a villain. So in the end, you know, for the first few movies when they introduced him, I was always like, why is this guy a problem? But in the event, the last movie, the last Avengers movie, I really felt like, wow, okay, they're making him a monster because he's real, because he's a real, you know, creature with emotions. And so.
And do you think maybe he just read Paul Ehrlich's book and should have read some others? Because Ehrlich wrote The Population Bomb in the 1970s, and Thanos seems really committed to this. And it's amazing to me, Adam, how many think pieces you can read that go, you know, Thanos is crazy, but, you know, he might be onto something. I'm going like, whoa, really?
Yeah, really.
It's all bad and overly simplistic ideas, right? We can at least establish that.
Yeah, no, I agree. That's why I think there are many Marvel movies that actually take on social issues in some really interesting ways, in ways that only they can. But this is not one of them. I mean, just because it's like his solution here, it's not like they really talked about climate change in any kind of detailed way, the way, say, it comes up in The Expanse, for example, my favorite show. But here I didn't think, you know, for this, in this Avengers movie, I don't feel that it's really a profoundly done.
Let's go back around the table. I'm going to ask all of you this then. Do you want to see any more social issues or political issues addressed in the 3-hour finale that drops today, tonight, wherever. Do you want that? Is that important to you? Would you like, especially as someone who's written a book about how we think about climate change galactically? I think that's the word. Would you like to see a little bit more on that part of it?
It's not necessary for me.
Interesting.
Because
I kind of thought the opposite. But
well, just because this movie hasn't been set up that way. But like, for example, Black Panther, you know, which was, oh my God, the way they raised issues about race in America in that, which probably no other super popular movie could you raise these
no
things
doubt.
And
Preach.
Put it right in people's
Preach.
Face.
Sorry.
No doubt. I mean, it was...
Or Captain America: The Winter Soldier, which was about state surveillance and yes. about, you know, veterans coming home and the difficulty mm-hmm. of it was like. Wow, this is a superhero movie, and yet, you know, they're bringing these issues to the fore in a way that I think...
Well, why not trust them to do that with Endgame then, no?
Because it hasn't been set up that way for me. Mm-hmm. That's the only thing.
See, okay. I think that it might be actually the opposite, because Endgame is going to deal with the consequences of the snap and actually show what would happen if we have this extreme climate movement, whether or not it's a good option or not. Mm. Taking from the trailer... Not from the actual movie, but
no
you
spoilers.
See, there's no spoilers. I haven't seen anything. But you see that the Statue of Liberty is basically turned into a marina because people have taken to the seas because they don't have resources. Because we constantly sit on, oh, it's half of the population. It's half of all living things. So we didn't just remove people. We removed resources.
Oh, wow.
So it's a big change in what we can see when we see now with climate migration in different areas who are running into these crises head on. So I think it's going to happen.
Oh, that's interesting.
It's
yeah.
just not maybe in your forefront of your mind, right. which is why I love the Marvel movies because they do make these huge, big social issues to a more digestible and an easier way and an easier conversation. You know, I'm a white lady who lives in the suburbs, but if I had children right now, Black Panther is a great way for me to expose my children to the race relations and colonialism and how the African diaspora even came to happen.
Right. And trauma, so, and intergenerational
absolutely,
trauma, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. Talking about going to Captain Marvel, showing that a military career for a woman is absolutely a viable and good option if that is something that they wanted.
Right.
So those are those kind of things that it begets different conversations that you wouldn't have otherwise.
All right, so Kristen's on board for thinking we will see a little bit of a message there.
Maybe a little bit.
Okay, we'll see. Jackie McGriff, what do you want? Do you want more kind of commentary message making here in this finale?
So when I go, Adam touched on it a little bit with Black Panther and especially the Winter Soldier, and I'm sure we'll get to that more because right now Captain America Winter Soldier is my favorite because of all that it speaks to, especially like militarization. In this movie, so like from like going through Captain America, the Civil War where they're talking about the Accords, what is it?
The Sokovia Accords.
Yeah, the Sokovia Accords, which I'll talk a little bit later. But, like, they're talking about that, and so that's where the divide happens. And then Infinity War, like, all these different characters are starting to come back together, and then they suffer loss. So now with Endgame, I kind of thinking that, and I haven't seen a trailer or anything. I've been trying to avoid every possible thing. I just want to go in fully blind. I hope they kind of touch on, like, really coming together and having, like, being from all, like, these different backgrounds and coming together and working through differences. Because even in Infinity War, we still saw, like, differences happening, you know, within the group, even though they weren't really a group because they're calling from all these different, you know, places and everything, and they don't really know each other, or they're still trying to familiarize themselves with, you know, other characters that we've seen in previous movies. So something that I kind of hope they touch on that would, you know, just be awesome and really speak to what's happening, especially in this country, about all these different people having different ideologies, having different backgrounds, you know, coming together and working on, like, defeating the real enemy here. And so, like, I mean, with everything that's going on right now in our political environment, I just feel like there's a lot of divide without people actually, like, talking to each other. We're more, like, talking at each other rather than working, you know, putting, like, differences aside and trying to work towards, like,
what would be, you know, beneficial for all of us, not just for some of us. So it's like, I see where it could get there. I'm kind of like, I don't know. I hope that it speaks a little bit more to that, or I at least see like there could be this opportunity to talk about that in this. Do I need it to happen? Not necessarily, but when I'm watching these movies, especially if I can see like parallels between now and like between what's going on there and what's going on in real life, I mean, it's definitely a bonus for me.
Okay. Adam Lubito.
Yeah, I think weaving those issues into these movies is kind of what pop culture does at its best. Like, mm-hmm. it's within the context of these sort of massive entertainments. It also, you know, with it, everyone is going out and seeing, by weaving those issues in, it's that allows it to be part of the conversation, and there's something sort of to latch onto rather than simply, I was entertained for a couple hours. And so, yeah, I always want to see some, at least some sort of deeper layer involved.
Okay. What, you want to add?
I was going to say, you can certainly turn your brain off and just look at this.
That's great
completely
too,
the surface of it. But if you do want to dig deeper into it, you absolutely can. And I think that's what makes these so compelling and why we've gotten to 22 movies is because there's so many layers.
Mm-hmm. And I think that it's put in. You know, when I was working with Dr. Strange and the director Scott Derrickson, you know, we had these long conversations about the fact that, like, you know, really that movie was about the nature of consciousness. You know, how does consciousness relate to physical reality? And so, you know, we had all these conversations about different ways. And then, and it all came down to the one scene, the one piece of dialogue, where Doctor Strange says, "Oh, you know, this is this bunch of mumbo jumbo," and she pushes him out of his body, right? And so it's like, you know, there's this huge issue that's there, but you know, the only way it's going to show up is going to be in a couple lines of dialogue. But that's what makes these movies so amazing.
But wait, what's that line signify for those who haven't seen it?
In Doctor Strange,
yeah,
that was the idea that there are many maps. I mean, she does that. The ancient one sort of shows Doctor Strange. You know, first she shows him an MRI of the brain, and she says, "What about this one?" And it's kind of a Tibetan, you know, chakra thing, and you know, so you know, it was this idea that you know, there's many ways to describe the relationship between consciousness and the physical reality. You know, and so you know, there was this. Of course, it was a movie about magic and all other things, but you know, really, what Scott wanted it to be was also a discussion about the nature of consciousness. Or you know, life and material, you know, life and materialism.
Is that your favorite of the films outside of, is that your favorite of the films?
I worked on it, so obviously it has a warm space in my heart. And it's funny because I didn't actually, Doctor Strange, I never read Doctor Strange. I mean, I read comic books a lot, and Marvel, not DC, sorry.
Doctor Strange was kind of like a second or third tier, wasn't
he? He was, right. And, you know, it was magic. I'm not interested in it. I was a science guy, so I really loved, you know, when I was growing up, Iron Man and Spider-Man, of course. But actually, I thought the movie, you know, it's one of my favorites. I think Spider-Man Homecoming, I thought, was amazing. Mm-hmm. Guardians of the Galaxy was actually my favorite, the first one. Because actually, that was also my favorite.
You just listed like half the movies. You got to pick one, dude.
Guardians of the Galaxy is my favorite. Doctor Strange.
Guardians of the Galaxy.
The Winter Soldier for me.
Okay.
Black Panther.
I guess I can go with Black Panther, too.
Okay.
There's somebody to choose from.
I know. It's like having children. Choose. You know, I get it. Yeah. Listeners, if you want to join the conversation as we talk about the dropping of Endgame and all of the different themes wrapped up in it, and I want to say again, I'm just going to keep saying this, you do not have to be a Marvel head to appreciate this conversation, because think about all of the different, the nature of consciousness, intergenerational racial trauma, the surveillance state, all of these things that are wrapped up into these films, where there's also really zingy dialogue and a lot of quick, slick, fast punches. That's a great way to describe the action. It's just punches all the time. It's interesting. I mean, so you don't have to be a Marvel head to appreciate this. But if you want to call in, share your thoughts, no spoilers this hour as we go towards Endgame, 844-295-TALK. It's toll free, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Who's the most compelling villain, most compelling baddies? I mean, for me, I haven't seen all the films. Killmonger was remarkable. Character in this series, and I thought Thanos was very well drawn. How do you rank the baddies, Adam?
I think I definitely agree with you. Killmonger, I think, is like the gold standard for finding that balance of you related to like his, you know, his entire story. He had a whole separate plot line on his own. I feel like not all of the Marvel villains got that. So yeah, I think he's number one for me.
Okay,
I totally see where you're coming from on Killmonger, but I think Winter Soldier is kind of the most compelling villain for me, because he flips from generic random dude who's a friend of Captain America, becomes a villain, doesn't kind of turns himself around and then becomes a villain again, and kind of it's this ebb and flow with
him. That's the name of the character, Winter Soldier?
Winter Soldier.
I haven't seen the film.
His I guess legal name, I guess, would be is James Buchanan Barnes.
Bucky Barnes.
But yeah, he ebbs and flows between, you know, the good and the bad pretty consistently in how he personally wrestles with it. But Thanos is like the Mac Daddy for sure.
Yeah.
Okay, Jackie?
As far as most compelling, let's see. So, okay, for me, it was Loki. From Thor, because here's the thing with villains, you usually get like this one dimensional character. You know, he's like, oh, I'm bad. You know, it's more like, you know, I'm bad. I'm a villain for to just be a villain. You know, not necessarily like going for a specific, like having a specific thing in mind where you can be like, oh, you know, actually I kind of feel for that character. So Loki's background, okay, so Loki is not an Asgardian, he is a frost giant. So Thor's father wages war on
Jotunheim.
Yeah, on Jotunheim. Thank you, because I was like, oh man, I'm reaching back to Thor, the first Thor. So he wages war on Jotunheim and then takes Loki. So he takes Loki because he is the son of who would be like their king and everything. So he raises him up. Now Loki is thinking, well, because I'm part of this family, I have an equal shot to I have a shot at the throne, right? He basically wants the power. So in that and of itself, you can argue like, okay, like that could be something to point to where, you know, you're just seeking power and everything. But he's thinking he has this shot, but he's grown up under the shadow of his older brother, who up until that point during the first Thor movie had been this like arrogant, you know, character that I didn't really root for, like at least at the start, right? Like, you know, because Thor is about Thor and his journey and everything and coming to his own, whereas Loki, who again has had to live in the shadows of his older brother, now wants a shot at the throne, is being told, I'm sorry, but you can't, or you could never be king, and all this other stuff, even though he really wants it.
It's kind of Game of Thrones.
Oh, gosh, yes. Yeah. Oh, man, there needs to be another, like, there needs to be a Game of Thrones hour I could talk about.
Are you kidding? If we did Game of Thrones, this is like a whole other language. Marvel is like Asgardians, I'm about to start mixing Game of Thrones language in, because it's like stuff that I hear but I don't fully understand.
It's a tough week for Game of Thrones, yes, and is. Marvel, oh, yeah.
And Marvel fans.
Alike.
I know,
yes,
it's just too exhausting, man.
I'm like, you know, I'm gonna have the tissues
this week. You know,
too much pain. And by the way, is it also tough for Loki, like when your older brother is that Australian dreamboat, right? That's who that is.
Well, and you know what? And that actor, so Tom Hiddleston, who plays Loki, actually auditioned to be Thor. He auditioned to be Thor, like he buffed up and everything. He played it, and Kenneth Branagh was actually like, "Actually, I think you would be more suited for Loki." So,
the evil brother.
So I'm like, it makes so much sense.
Yeah, what must it be like for that guy to be like, "I thought I could be that guy," and it turns out I'm nowhere close. This man cut from a block of granite with a voice like a jet engine is Thor, and I am just Loki.
Yeah.
Well, Loki's pretty cool, though.
Yeah, there's the scene that I always go back to. Again, it's in the first Thor movie where he's talking to Odin, and, like, you know, he's talking about, like, his history and everything, and everything I had just explained about, you know, how he came to be a part of this family and everything, and there's this, he shouts out, and I forget what the dialogue is beforehand, but he lets out this, tell me, like, because he wants his father to, like, face the truth or tell him the truth and everything, and it's this very emotional scene, and there have been many times like that where it's, I mean, yeah, like, Loki's off, I mean, he's the god of mischief, so he's doing things, of course, that you're like, okay, Loki, seriously, but at the same time, like, there are moments with him and his brother where you're really like, oh man, like, okay, like, I really feel for Loki in this moment. And if, okay, so if we're going to talk about Thor 2, I did not really like the movie, but what it does really, really well is that Loki, because he has the power to, like, kind of like shield things almost. So, like, what you see is not necessarily
what's real. So there's a moment where he's like on house arrest, basically, in this movie, and Thor's talking to him outside the glass, and you know, like in the room he's in, it looks like it's well, very well kept, but then Thor is like, okay, like, no, like, show me what is really going on here. So like the whole, you know, there's this whole thing that goes over, and it's actually, so it's not actually clean. It's obviously been messed up and everything, because I think they just lost their mother at this point.
Yeah, Freya had died.
Yeah, yeah. So their mother had just died, and he had a really close relationship. At least it infers that he's.
You are going really deep here.
I know. I'm sorry. Like, this is what I'm like. I'm vying for Loki here.
Yeah, I think that back and forth has been, you know, Loki's trajectory over the entire series is what has made him also a compelling villain.
Yeah. Or did.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, he had that, and then he got the, like, a hero's sacrificial death at the beginning of the last movie.
Which I'm still mourning over, if you couldn't already tell. Anyway, I'm done.
R.I.P. Loki. Adam Frank.
I actually, you know, I mean, I agree. I think Killmonger is, you know, because of the whole story, is the one of the greatest villains. But I also want to put in a vote for Vulture in Homecoming.
That's a good one. Spider-Man.
Spider-Man Homecoming, right? Because he's just like this guy who's got a construction company, you know, who's trying to make it and loves his family. And he gets basically, you know, nailed by Stark Industries, you know? Like, he's got this great contract. He's going to be making a lot of money. And then it's like, oh, nope, Stark Industries is going to be taking it. And so, you know, just kind of to survive, he starts working under the radar. And it's a great dialogue in the movie about, you know, so much of the heroes we see are these like high level heroes, right? There, you know, the Avengers, they take care of the whole world. And at one point, and Spider-Man's trying to figure out who he is in that world. Like, he wants to be an Avenger, and it's really this dialogue with Vulture, who's played by who is he played by
Michael Keaton.
Michael Keaton, and it's played so well by Michael Keaton, that, you know, convinces Spider-Man that, you know, no, I really need to become the friendly neighborhood Spider-Man, you know, because it becomes a one percenter issues, right? Where Vulture says to him, he says, like, you think Tony Stark cares about me, cares about your neighborhood, you know, which is true. Tony Stark is living his billionaire life. So I just want to put a little vote for. I thought that was a believable villain who you felt something for.
Now, do you, because I haven't seen that film, do you walk away from that film at least thinking more about complex economic and social inequality issues? I mean, is the Vulture so compelling that you almost found yourself at times rooting for him, or did you go, okay, look here, we've gone too far?
Well, no, I think definitely you rooted for his perspective. He clearly had gotten, you know, nailed by, you know, Tony Stark and, you know, big government, you know, government run by billionaires. And, you know, he was just trying to make his way. He wanted to take care of his family. And the language they put into his mouth was very compelling about the fact that, look, these people at the top, they're not thinking about us. They're not thinking about the little guy, you know. And you know, we got screwed. Pardon my language. You know, I mean, if I'm not sure I can say
it's okay. You can.
I can. Okay, we got screwed by the economic forces of the 1%. And so it's, you know, this is always the thing about Marvel. They'll do it subtly. They're not going to beat you over the head. There's the scene in Spider-Man Homecoming, where the whole class takes a trip to the Washington Monument, and one of the characters, Spider-Man's future girlfriend, you know, the teacher's like, oh, do you want to go in? And she's like, no, I don't want to be part of a monument that was built by slaves. And the teacher's like, oh, come on, this wasn't built by slaves. And he looks over to the, you know, the guard, one of the guards, and the guard's like, yeah, well, kinda. And like, for them, just subtly, just a moment, to drop that issue that the Washington Monument was in fact built by or partially by slaves was like, what? What other movie that wasn't a message movie, right? Could just drop that in there for people to suddenly be like, whoa, is that true?
And they didn't have to do that.
Exactly.
And you're right. A lot of Marvel heads are probably Googling going, wait a second.
And then you find like, oh, wow, this is kind of partially true. You know, I mean, that's amazing for this huge piece of billion dollar movie, for it to just like, you know, subtly put it in there without, you know, making it a point about it. But now suddenly you've learned something really important about American history.
As we go to break, let me ask the other Adam across the table, the film critic for City Newspaper. What's the line for you, taking what Adam Frank just said about, I'm gonna as a filmmaker, I'm gonna choose to add a line of dialogue here that I didn't have to. Oh, the Washington Monument, you mean the built by slaves? Not even central to the plot necessarily. What's the line for you in all of these films that take these risks, that maybe, you know, add that layer and make you think, without getting too message movie, as Adam Frank said? How do you How do you see that line, and has Marvel largely done a pretty good job adhering to that line?
I think it's kind of a case-by-case basis and depends on the issue and the movie. I mean, in that case, yeah, it's great when it can, yeah, toss something in to make people think about deeper issues. And as we've mentioned, you know, Black Panther was the best at working in some real issues and giving them some substance. Whereas, you know, if you look at, like, occasionally it tries to tackle, like, militarization, and I feel like it's kind of wonky if you kind of follow, like, the through line of what it's saying about that and whether it's good or it's bad or how it critiques it. It's tries, and I respect it trying because it's this massive entertainment, but it kind of fumbles that issue more often than it succeeds, I think.
All right, well, as we go to break, Mike Rice just says, can you ask the panel, what will this week be like with all of the expected deaths in Game of Thrones and Avengers Endgame, a fantasy bloodbath for the nerds?
I'm going to be a puddle of my tears.
So let's get that break. We'll talk more about that, how everyone is sort of grappling with what they expect will be a very emotional 3 hours with Avengers Endgame. So, Mike, thank you for that question. We're talking to Adam Lubito, Adam Frank, Jackie McGriff, Kristen Edmond, and they are all very excited to take a look at this new and the final in this remarkable series. 22 films over roughly a decade, culminating in this. So let's get that break and come right back on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Friday on the next Connections, Senator Elizabeth Warren has a plan to forgive 95% of student loan debt in this country. Is it fair? Would it work? And what impact would that have on people who have student loans and will have them for years? In our second hour, a conversation about the latest in Parkinson's research. Talk with you Friday on Connections. This is Connections. So Mike writes to us and says, how does your panel feel about Game of Thrones and Avengers and all of these deaths of your favorite characters? So I'm going to start with Kristen Edmond, who made a point during our brief break that I think I'm going to be careful because this is a spoiler-free hour.
Correct.
But just knowing the films in the pipeline, it makes you go, well, unless we're starting with a brand new canon, if that's the word, or unless we're starting fresh and that Endgame is the last film in a story and we're starting a new story, if you just look at the films in Marvel's pipeline, you can start figuring out not everybody dies. Does that give you a little more peace?
Right. So to kind of answer the first question, yeah. I feel like I need to have like a prophylactic Xanax prescription getting ready for not only this evening's events, but Sunday's events as well. So kind of just getting that off to the side. But yeah, definitely looking towards the future of what does Marvel do next beyond that. So it seems pretty clear from the direction of Kevin Feige and the other movies that have been produced and kind of rumors of contracts and what have you, that this is an ending. It is the cashed check that the first Avengers promised. So we will see things kind of moving forward. So think about Back to the Future, that you go, you change one thing, you go into a separate timeline, you have another thing, but they're kind of loosely related. It's kind of that same concept loosely, because now we're going to have the next Spider-Man movie, Far From Home, coming out in this July. We know that that's happening. Trailers are out there. Some of the best villains in Marvel are still yet to come because of that. Black Panther 2 has been loosely confirmed because they made a ton of money with it.
Yeah.
So we know that there are going to be a handing of the gauntlet, literally and figuratively, to this next generation of heroes. And that, I think, is kind of what Captain Marvel was set out to usher in and say, hey, there is a bigger world outside of this 22-movie world that we gave you. And there is somewhere for this to go.
Well, there's money to be made.
There
so they still
going to
be making money.
Of course.
They're going to be making movies. But are you convinced, though, that it will still be a continuation of the post-Thanos storyline?
I think with the Disney and Fox having their new partnership as well, you can definitely say that there will be a continuation. It won't be of the Thanos story.
But it won't wipe out. It won't start fresh. I mean, we don't know.
That's the question.
Okay.
Yeah,
right.
That's the question.
Nerding.
I mean, I could pontificate on what I have kind of gained from context clues on trailers, but even
don't
people
spoil
have,
it.
Yeah, people don't even want me to say that, so I will refrain at this moment.
If you want to get super nerdy, it's still Earth 616. So there's a Marvel multiverse where there's different versions of Earth, and I'm pretty sure we're Earth. This is from the comic book.
We are Earth 616.
616. So it'll still be Earth 616. That's deep nerdy.
Yeah, baby.
Are you serious?
I swear to God. Yeah. There's other Earths. There's
what's
other
going on
versions?
On Earth 618?
Oh well, you have to go. Who knows? Yeah, I got to go back and figure that one out. But yeah, there's multiple because it's a multiverse in Marvel. Yeah. So, you know, there's
could
lots
I
of
have
Earths.
Been an NBA player? In
you,
Earth
you are right now.
Doctor Strange. Let's talk about this. Okay, so that's kind of an idea of what may be going forward. Though I do want Adam Frank did want to kind of put in his little plug for the fact that you think that we have never really seen something like this cinematically.
I think Marvel needs a lot of credit for doing something artistically that is far, I mean, you know, Adam, you would know better than I do, but that in the world of movies, you know, to create 22 movies over 10 years, each of which are seamlessly woven together. I mean, that's the whole thing with the Easter eggs, right? There'll be something mm-hmm. on Captain America's desk in movie 4 that relates to Ant-Man in movie 21. You know, it's just phenomenal how they slow brick by brick how they built this universe and made it whole and complete and believable, as opposed to now excuse me the DC or other, it's not just DC, the monsters, you know, there's been a couple of
even Star Wars struggles with it sometimes.
Yes.
Or I don't know, like a show like Lost, which couldn't even hold it together as one show. and they couldn't, they put all these Easter eggs in, turned out that nobody knew what they were,
right.
And I'm still not over it 9 years later. And you see it, so what you're saying is you can tell a long story over
right.
a long game,
right. Right.
And know where you may
in
be
movies,
going.
In movies. Not. I mean, it's you mm-hmm. can definitely do it on Netflix or something where you got 38 episodes. But to do it in movies across a decade, I just think they deserve, you know, it's something singular that hasn't happened before.
Well,
maybe it may not happen again.
What's the critic think? What do you think?
Oh, yeah. I completely agree. It's at least on, you know, modern movie making, there's never been anything attempted like what Marvel has done. And a lot of people credit Kevin Feige, the main producer behind all the Marvel movies, as being the guy who kind of keeps track and, you know, has made it this sort of clear path for how the Marvel Cinematic Universe has proceeded. And yeah, I huge credit to everyone involved because, yeah, it's an impressive achievement.
So Marvel is VHS, DC is Beta.
Okay.
You know, Marvel
right.
is Coke,
okay.
DC is Pepsi.
If I may hear.
Gotta hear from the DC
The floor
fan.
Is yours, DC Stan.
Hey, okay. Number one, I love them both, so so it's fine. Okay, my whole problem with DC has, because it's still like, I mean, like I love Superman, I love Batman, Wonder Woman, like all of them. And I have been in several arguments about like how they're too godlike and how you can't relate to them. Yet Frank is looking at me like, yeah, well, duh. And then I'm like, okay, but hold on. So I feel like especially with the original Dark Knight trilogy. Mm. So I thought like Christopher Nolan, amazing.
I'll give you that.
Amazing.
But it's
a
singularity. Like, mm-hmm. that's the whole thing. It's a singular
right.
trilogy.
Right. And so, like, that was done well. And again, I know people have problems with Man of Steel, but I thought it was the first attempt at least making Superman a little bit more relatable. Mm. Just a little bit. And then Wonder Woman.
Wonder Woman was good.
I cried. Yeah. I was bawling because I was like, finally, like they did a female character. They showed that vulnerability can be strong. There were so many different things. It was written well. It was directed by a woman. It was written by women. It was a phenomenal piece. And then they get this is my frustration, and then they get to Justice League and Wonder Woman is turned into just another thing for men to gawk at. Like I'm like, she had all these powers and then you kind of downplay it in this film. So I'm like, my problem with DC right now has just been like the direction and also like some of the writing. And I'm just like, okay, like if you're going to try to go the route up like that Marvel has, which I know DC has faced criticism about, because it's like if you're trying to go the Marvel route, then it looks like you're also just copying them.
Right.
So that's what they've had to face. But at the same time, it's like, okay, so how do we become different, but also make it so that these stories are also compelling?
Right. But I mean, Marvel Marvel as itself, mm-hmm. when they first started in 2008, 2009, mm-hmm. with mm-hmm. producing these movies, they bet big and mm-hmm. won. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you're going to compare it to DC, DC bets safe mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. pulls out moderate returns.
Yes.
I think the DC universe versus the Marvel universe would have been completely different mm-hmm. had we started with Wonder Woman. Mm-hmm. Even if you take the movies as is and watch it in that order, it still works. It still fits. But, you know, at the time when these movies first started, there was no Marvel Studios.
Right.
They had lost so many of their properties. Mm-hmm. That's why there's this big deal that they have, you know, Fox properties back. That was mm-hmm. why it was a big deal that they have Sony properties back, mm-hmm. because they had to strip Marvel for parts because they didn't have any money. So they, you know, put it all on black and said, mm-hmm. we're going to try to do this and we're going to commit to it. And that's what paid off for them. It could have totally gone the opposite way, but it didn't.
Yeah, they've got all the money now.
Right.
Yeah.
They've all
yeah.
Oh, right.
And especially, and I feel like people kind of forget that when they did that, when they started with Iron Man, like at the time, Iron Man wasn't a huge A-list character.
No,
Robert Downey Jr. was a huge risk.
Right. Yes. Yes. He was. Yes, yeah. Yes, he was already shown to be. And I think the real problem with the DC movies, I mean, first of all, yeah, I could argue that also the DC characters, going back to the comic books, what I loved about Marvel was that the characters were real. It was Spider-Man was a 16-year-old who, being a superhero, made your life worse. I mean, that's what I always mm-hmm. loved about the comics. But the real flaw that DC made was, like, I think with, Suicide Squad?
Oh, God.
Right, we're sort of like, okay,
not
you know, we're gonna build our universe, and in this one movie, we're going to introduce, like, 9 characters to show you all their backstories. And it was like, you know, guys, that's just lazy. But, mm-hmm. you know, Marvel did it brick by brick, which is why it worked. You can't do it all in one movie.
Exactly. I mean, I think you just, like, Marvel had... They had a plan. Like, they had a plan. And so I always joke with friends, I'm like, okay, DC just needs to, like, maybe fire half of their executives and mm-hmm. then just, like, start fresh. Like, because really, like, Marvel came up with this plan and DC is kind of like, oh, we're just going to put a movie out here, here, and here and not really kind of try to sync them together.
But with any luck, Infinity War helped with getting rid of half of their executives.
Well, exactly. So I'm like, Thanos needs to do a number on DC. We'll be okay.
Can I just say here, so Tiana Rison says, all right, Evan Dawson, chill out with the DC hate. I want to say something I've never admitted on this program or anywhere.
Thank you, Tiana.
When I was growing up, my twin brother and I each had comic books hanging on our wall. Mm-hmm. He had Spider-Man. I had Batman. Okay? I was in that DC world. As I got older, I realized the Marvel stories were just a lot more interesting. But you know what I actually liked kind of in my comic book transition? I liked Image Comics. I liked Todd McFarlane's
Spawn. Oh, we should
Spawn.
Be talking about... Oh.
I thought Spawn was interesting.
Now East of West, Why the Last Man. I mean, really, in many ways, the most interesting thing that are happening in graphic novels.
I thought those were much
okay.
more interesting
graphic
than DC,
novels are not
so
comics.
That's why. That's
they are
why.
These, the alternative, the
also,
other brand.
Sarah wants to know, Evan, did you really refer to Thor as an Australian dreamboat cut from granite? Look, I'm just being honest.
Yeah,
just, Meg and Matt can't stop talking about him.
Cool.
I don't know which Hemsworth it is. Which Hemsworth is it?
It's Chris.
Chris. Yeah. Good job, Chris. Working it out, man. He's a great-looking guy. Yeah. What are you going to say?
I think DC, you forget the history of DC. There would be no Marvel without DC because of Action Comics and things like that. You know, Wonder Woman is the feminist icon. She was on the cover of the first issue of Ms. Magazine. Mm-hmm. So I think if they thought back a little bit more to their heritage of just how much this shaped... You know, things. The reason why Superman's hair is black is because it was easier to print on ink, but also because he looked like the guys producing the comics. Mm-hmm. He wasn't a blonde, angular, you know, dude. He looked like a Jewish guy who was the guy who was writing it. Mm-hmm. You know, so these are those things. If they stuck a little bit more true to their heritage and got a little bit dirty and got a little bit in the mud about it, I think they would make it way more successful and speak to more people.
Mm-hmm. Well, all right, Adam Lubitau, let's get this question from Joel, which is, what characters do your panel want to see that we haven't seen in the Marvel Universe?
Oh, geez.
I mean, are there any? There are so many.
I'm trying to think who hasn't come up.
Yeah.
Oh, there Squirrel are. Girl.
I mean,
there will be a cartoon of Squirrel Girl.
Oh, there is.
I was going to say,
they're working
on
Squirrel Girl is a thing.
Yeah. The AT&T girl from the commercials, she's voicing Squirrel Girl.
Oh, that's very good.
Milana Von Trubb.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I really want to see Fantastic Four, but the one thing I don't want to see from Fantastic Four is an origin of Fantastic Four.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just like I didn't want to see Uncle Ben die in Spider-Man like we've seen in six other movies.
Yeah.
I just want to see Fantastic Four just happen. Maybe they've been working in the shadows right along.
Yeah, similarly, yeah. The first one that came to mind is X-Men, because as a kid, I was always an X-Men guy. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of excited to see what a Marvel version of that looks like, since we've had X-Men movies and they've sort of.
That was pre-Marvel Studios?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Sony? Who has it? Who's? It's all been.
It's Fox.
Fox. Fox. Yeah.
So,
okay.
So you have more trust in Marvel Studios with this story?
I mean, just based on the fact that the X-Men movies have kind of been diminishing returns, there's been good stuff. And now that, you know, they have the rights, I definitely think they'll start working in those X-Men characters.
Okay. Anything that you want to see?
I'm wondering if with this new merger between Marvel and Fox, or Disney and Fox, if there's going to be any talk of maybe bringing back Sinister Six. Or, because it was introduced, so when there was The Amazing Spider-Man, The Amazing Spider 2, there was all this publicity about the story being developed for Sinister Six, and then of course, like, when they decided to take another route, like, that kind of just left. And so I'm wondering if that's going to be something that they bring up again, but that's something that I would have liked to see explored. So I don't know.
All right, let me get a phone call. This is Jason in Rochester. Go ahead, Jason.
How you doing today? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Everybody, one thing that gets really missed when you're talking about DC, and we talk about this at work all the time, I've got some huge comic book nerds I work with, but is that these characters are 75 to 80 years old, and the world's an incredibly different place than it was when they were developed. And I think when you translate that, or you try to translate it on screen, some of that gets lost, and they get a lot of unfair criticism. DC has, in fact, gone to a multiverse type of thing. We have a Gotham TV show. We have a new Joker movie coming out. But I think those things need to be taken into consideration when you're considering that universe, where Marvel has had the kind of a cookie-cutter approach to the films, and they have built them one at a time. It's an entirely different way of doing things. So I just wanted to see what the panel thought about that.
Okay. Jason, thanks very much. I thought a comment on DC was going to be, how can they mangle Batman so many times over the years with the worst choices? But no.
Except for Christian Nolan. Bell. Except for, you know, Christopher Nolan's version.
No, I'm with you there. But he's saying, look at how long it goes back here. Look at what's changed. Probably fair points there. No? You're not buying it?
Look at it was 1966 that Stan Lee and, I guess, Jack Kirby, you know, in the middle of everything that's going on in 1966, invent a character who is the king of an African nation that is the most technologically advanced nation on Earth. 1966. I mean, that was a long time ago.
And if we really want to be fair, Thor is a Norse mythology, and that's been around a lot longer than Superman.
So I see what the guy said. I'm unfair on DC, but I do think that, you know, Marvel goes way back, and they were revolutionary from the beginning, from 1960. You know, Spider-Man being a teenager, the idea, you know, being a superhero made his life hard.
Go ahead, Jackie.
Okay. I was just going to say, so just to also be another defender of DC. So I remember learning, so Superman growing up was my favorite, still is my favorite, always will be my favorite, whatever, fight me. But at the same time, so I remember reading an article or watching a piece of a documentary or something, and it was talking about how Superman on television in like the 60s and 70s is talking about the Ku Klux Klan and talking about racism and all that. And I'm just like, again, like, DC is speaking to all these different issues, especially where that is a hot topic. It was a controversial topic then, and I don't know. So, yeah, that's
all right. Last 2 minutes, Adam won. Prediction time. They're going to beat Thanos somehow, right? They have to.
Yes.
What's going to happen?
I feel like the main kind of original Avengers are going to make the sacrifice, and they're going to kind of be phased out to make room for the new class.
If they get the time stone and they just reverse time and everything goes back to normal, will you be disappointed?
Yeah. I would be disappointed.
Okay. It was all a dream.
I mean, yeah. Largely, that's what happened in the comics. I'm trying to remember. But Kristen, go ahead.
I think that's exactly what's going to happen.
Oh, no!
Because it's the only thing that kind of makes sense to me. And I think what I want everyone to be prepared. Some of your guys aren't going to be around, you know.
Wait,
you know, come
for,
the next time.
So. You said no spoilers. You said you don't know.
No, I just kind of...
You're guessing.
I'm putting the puzzle pieces together for sure.
You're ready for some emotion.
But I think it might be unexpected in how they kind of trail off into the sunset. And that it for me is what I'm looking most forward to.
Jackie.
Whatever happens, I'm crying. I'm just going to put that out there. Whatever happens, I'm in a puddle of my own tears. All the Kleenex. Yes.
Adam.
My prediction is that the Night King sits on the Game of
Thrones.
Yes! That's it. I'm sticking with it.
You had to get that in there. But Thanos is not going to sit on the Game of Thrones when his time is done. Yeah. He's going to go back to hoeing the fields.
We're going to lose some of the, as you said, some of the original Avengers we're going to lose in a beautiful way.
I want to thank all of our guests. Adam Lubitow, are we going to see any work from, we always see it in City Newspaper. Are you doing anything on this with City, or what are you working on?
I reviews every week. Probably will have a review of this at some point in the next week or so.
Well, we'll see if we guys all need some emotional time to come back together after this. You're going to see it? When are you seeing it?
Seeing it tonight.
6 p.m. and 9:50, two times.
Whoa!
My entire research group is going tomorrow.
I'm late. I'm not seeing it till Monday night.
Whoa! Oh,
wow. I know.
Thanks to all of our guests. Jackie, Adam, Kristen, thank you very much.
Pleasure.
Yes,
I want to mention, you know, as much as we've had some fun, and you need it on this program once in a while, you need it. We're working on some serious stuff, too. This afternoon, producer Megan Mack and I have been working on a report that you'll hear on All Things Considered regarding the Pittsburgh School District and some incidents you might have been reading about there. So we'll have more of that this afternoon. Hey, Rob Braden, thank you for being a great engineer. He's one of the Avengers. Megan Mack is a superhero. I'm just Evan Dawson. I'm Bruce Banner, who can't get the Hulk going. But I'll see you tomorrow.